Swami, first of all, I did look at the improvements to the abstract. They're great. I think this helps clarify several of the terms and put them in the right context that we have. So I guess we should probably discuss what our next step should be with respect to data collection and with respect to writing. So I don't know if you have something concrete in mind as to how we should proceed. Perhaps you should tell us what you have in mind first, and we can go from there.
So the thing that I talked about is additional evaluation, right?
Yeah.
So first thing that we can actually do very simple is run the same YKSD benchmark and do power measurements, basically to say how much power does level DB consume at the device level, and similarly how much NVMKB consumes. That might be an interesting test. I don't know if we want to add power to the mix. That's one thing that we can easily do without much effort.
Okay. Do you have power measurement infrastructure? I know we used to have some because we did some power work earlier in the lab.
No. So the key thing basically is our devices actually give us the tool that we give with the driver. If we run a tool that it actually gives you the power measurements, and based on that we can actually collect and do that. We don't really have to connect anything.
Okay.
It gives you the output of how much power it's consuming to run a workflow.
Okay, then it's much easier than I thought.
Yeah, it's a lot easier. That's why I suggested you could probably do this one. So I'll actually get the exact details and the information about the tools and power to both you and Leo.
Okay.
So that he can run this measurement if we think that's an easier or interesting experiment to do.
Yeah, So the point behind the power measurements being that we want to show NVMKB consuming less power than level DB, I guess.
Exactly.
And we hope that will happen.
It will happen
because of the writing.
Yeah, write amplification causes a lot of writing. Means power consumption is going to be higher.
Yes.
Not just endurance alone. So that's another implication.
Yeah. Right? So one question I had about the write amplification. I mean, the earlier test Leo showed that the write amplification was dramatically lower. Did the test themselves run for long enough that the device with garbage collector was invoked and we could see the performance and power? Well, putting aside the power for the moment because power wasn't measured in the previous paper, but I wasn't sure if in the previous paper we ran the test long enough that the performance benefits of lower write amp showed up in the test, because that would require the device to fill up.
I'm almost certain that the garbage collection was not running during those tests. The reason being is that the size of the workload is relatively small compared to the size of the device, and it does take a lot of time for it to fill it up. And I also make sure that before we run any tests, we do a low level formatting of the device, so pretty much the garbage collection was never active.
So I guess, Anisha, your point is that the performance implications of the reduced writing will only really show up when the device starts garbage collecting, right?
Yes, so there are two performance impacts of the reduced writing. So the first one, you know, if you're dealing with an empty device, you know, the fact that the OS and the device itself is doing less work would mean that the writes that took place would probably get better latencies because they weren't being queued up behind other things. So you'll see one level of the impact of reduced writing just even on an empty device. Then the second impact, after you let the test run for a while and the device is filled up, there'll be less garbage collection going on in the KV case because there's just less writing going on. And so you'll see the next level of performance increase. So I think, you know, and that requires, you know, typically many hours of testing because you would want the device to fill up ideally naturally. So you don't want to, you know, fill it up through, you know, like a random write process or something, but you really want the test to run long enough to let the device fill up through its natural process.
I think in, for our workload, it would take too long.
Yeah, and it's a hard test to run, but we've seen benefits. So, for example, in the compression work that we publicly released in April, one of the interesting insights that we got was that, when you do compression efficiently, even though the compression itself takes up CPU resources, the fact that it causes less writing means that in the sustained case, the compressed workload can actually outperform the uncompressed workload because it's writing less to the flash. And that's not something you normally, at least it wasn't my intuition initially, it hadn't occurred to me until we saw it. It's a very interesting thing because normally with flash, most of the time when you're dealing with flash, things only get worse over time because the garbage collection kicks in. But if you really think about the writing up front, technologies that reduce the writing tend to result in better performance over time, which is counter to most things involving flash.
So in that case, it becomes a matter of hitting the right spot with the compression algorithm, right? Like compress enough, but at the same time, lightweight enough so that everything is done fast?
Precisely, yes. And so that's why, when we put a good compression technique in place, we found that it actually, the net result at the application level could outperform uncompressed because the cost was, overshadowed by the gain. But I was mostly using that as an example that in the case of KV, for example, since the write amplification is so dramatically reduced, we might find that if we run the test for longer, we will see an even bigger performance delta.
I see. Yeah, so I think the challenge here is to have a workload that can fill up the flash device. I mean, can we create a really small partition, and is that even realistic? And how it behaves relative to a large drive if we reduce the size available size to the application?
That they would have to answer that.
In general, for our devices, Raju, I tend to not recommend that because. Well, first of all, just creating a partition would not help because the device will internally use all the available flash bandwidth. We have some techniques that we use internally to sort of shut down part of the device, but those are not reliable in these kinds of experiments. We use them for more, QA kind of testing. So the best thing probably to do would be that, if we have, like, for example, the YCSP runs that Leo, you did, there was something like 7 different tests, right? Maybe we just take one of the tests and just, let it run for, 2 days straight or something and gather some data. And since the test is going to take so long to run, we can't run all of them, but maybe we can just run one and we'll just sacrifice the number of days required.
We can definitely do that. Ideally, I would like to get a better understanding of what the workload is so that maybe we can accelerate the process of artificially filling up the hard disk in a pattern that is not the same, at least very similar to that of the workload. But in the worst case scenario, we can do what you suggested of just letting it run for a couple of days until it's done.
So I'll leave it up to you, but those are some of the options for sure.
Let me pull up the paper here. I'm trying to see what performance numbers we did report in the other paper.
They were already quite good, by the way, even before this.
Right. Right, so I'm just looking at the... So we did report YCSB performance numbers. And what I recollect, you're right, that they were actually quite good. But you're saying that we can perhaps make an extra point as to what happens when there's maybe another set of bars where we show full device versus empty device. Because what this is empty device, right? Figure 5. And what we are looking to show, what Nisha was talking about earlier, is what happens in a full device condition where garbage collection is actually going on while you're running the virtual. Does that sound right?
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a simple way to verify whether the garbage collection is running or not?
There are some, ways that you can see the effects of the garbage collector in FlashProc. I'll have Swami send those to you. But then, it depends also on how you run the test, because it has various metrics that kick in. And so, it will try to find the least impactful way to do garbage collection. So, if you have a large drive, chances are it won't kick in until it feels like there's some space pressure.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was thinking about is, what if we use the Fusion drive, fill it up with other stuff, right, so that the garbage collector will kick in earlier than 2 days. Does that help?
I think the pattern in which you fill it up has a significant impact in the garbage collection.
And so what happens is that if you fill it up in the same way for both the level DB and the YCSB, it's very likely that when the garbage collection kicks in, it will behave the same way across the two, whereas if they had naturally filled up the device with their own patterns, it would have behaved differently for the two.
I see. Sure. Okay, makes sense.
So that's unfortunately the kind of the issue there. There's a couple of different ways to attack it. You'll still see some delta because, so think of it this way, garbage collection responds to two things. It's the incoming write load and the nature of the patterns on the device. So its fundamental goal is to make sure that it finds free space at the rate of the incoming write, because otherwise the device will run out of space. So if the incoming write load, in the case of KV, for example, is less, then regardless of whatever is the pattern on the device, the garbage collector will run less, and therefore it will have less impact, and so that will show up in the performance delta. Mm-hmm. So that's effect number one, and that effect can be seen even if you artificially fill the device with, as long as you give the same pattern,
right?
It will do the same thing, just at a lower rate. Then there's the second effect, which is what Leo is referring to, which is what it actually does will also be driven by the pattern. And so that will be different across across the level DB and the KV if you let them naturally fill up the device on their own momentum.
Makes sense.
Right. I think the pattern that we will potentially see with our key value store is more simple in the way that because the hash is probably behaves like a random write, but in the case of level DB, since it is sitting on top of a regular file system, the patterns become much more complex and less predictable.
Right. But isn't it also true that level DB writes more sequentially? But I guess whether that helps or not is a different question. I know that NVMKV doesn't write sequentially. I thought that level DB does write sequentially.
Right.
But that may not even help. Something for us to do.
So, Raju, that is true actually. If level DB simply writes things sequentially, then you're actually going to garbage collect not much from the device level. But the point is, if you run multiple instances of level DB, then that's no longer true. With pools with NVMKV, that still be true, basically.
Yeah, and so that's an additional point that can be made in the paper, which is the pools versus the multi-instance. Unless there's a pools feature in level DB that I don't know about.
Level DB
truly
uses files and stuff.
Okay.
So I don't think...
Okay. I wasn't sure. So the other thing is, I guess, Raju, what is your... take on whether this paper is sufficiently distinctive given the concerns that we had about the hot storage and, you know,
yeah, which is why, which is
regarding the over maturity of the hot storage paper.
Yeah, I do have that concern, which is why I, you know, said let's write an abstract to see, you know, what stands out as the significant difference relative to the previous paper. I think that, you know, this paper sounds to me more like a detailed description of some features that were already in the previous paper and other features that are new. But nevertheless, all of these design descriptions and discussion was not included in that previous paper.
Right.
So in that sense, I see that it's significant a difference. But in terms of ideas, we can always get hit. So I guess the challenge would be to write this up, particularly the introduction, in such a way that we bring up all the differences and the contributions here up front, so that there is no doubt, or there is what the differences are with respect to the previous work. But I think this can fly. I hope it does, because it seems to be a lot of new stuff here that people would benefit from reading. But it's difficult to say with certainty that this is, you know, going to fly. I think we should go for it anyway, because this paper doesn't exist in any form anywhere. So I think we can make it fly, if not at fast, then at a different place.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with what you said.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more optimistic actually about this.
Okay.
I think it should not be much of trouble to get into fast. Again, I might be wrong, but
I don't know.
But
yeah.
At least, again, you probably know this better than I do. But I somehow feel that if we actually add some additional evaluation and more detailed description of other things that we haven't talked about, it should be okay for fast. But fast is not that difficult to get into.
Yeah, my worry is not about the paper and in the app, you know, in a vacuum, its suitability for fast. I'm worried about the fact that it singled itself out in the hot storage discussion and the overlap of individuals in the program committee. That's my worry.
Well, just to clarify, we were not singled out. There were two other papers. So
but you know what I mean, though. I mean, you know, yes, it wasn't singled out, but it was noted. Yeah.
It was noted that as one of the papers that seemed like a fast paper already.
Yeah, and one good thing is Margot is part of steering committee, but again, if it's discussed in the program committee meeting, then I can't, it's not much that we can do.
Yeah, anyway, I think I agree with Raju that there is enough stuff here that I certainly think it's worth the shot, and it will be up to us to explain the difference.
Yeah, and the evaluation is going to be a lot more involved, so whatever we talk about in that regard will be new.
And maybe we could even pitch it a little differently, and rather than saying, like the hot storage paper was, here is NVMKV, kind of introducing NVMKV, that was the point of the hot storage paper.
Yeah.
And this could be more like, you know, trade-offs for flash-optimized KV stores using NVMKV as a test case.
Hmm.
Or something.
Yeah, the trade-offs paper, I think that's a little bit more difficult to write without going into the generalized version of all the discussion. I think we talked about that a little bit, and then we realized that the discussions that we were having, a lot of it would be non-KV specific. Right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I missed the meeting where we decided not to do that. I'm sorry. I'm behind. Yes. Okay, I'm up to speed now. Okay. Yeah. I've forgotten about that. My apologies.
Right. Okay, so so Swami, what maybe the next step then would be to come up with an outline, paper outline, and then do a task division. In the meanwhile, if we can have Leo, if we can get some tasks over to Leo in terms of getting data, I think that would be nice.
Yeah.
I think the there are some parts which are already pretty clear, right? Like the pools evaluation.
Yeah.
We could do that almost immediately. I don't think we're missing anything for that, are we?
No.
Oh yeah, you were going to find out if you can have multiple NVM KV instances on the same drive.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't do anything about it. I'll actually get back to you today.
Okay, but that's just one configuration. That's one experiment which we either run or not run, depending on what you find, right? The rest stays the same, which is. Sorry, go ahead.
No, nothing. I think technically it should be possible.
Okay.
But I'm just worried there's no hard coding that actually prevents it, but I'll confirm it for you. Yeah, that's the only thing. But again, I agree that that would be an awesome evaluation to do to make it complete.
Right. So that, I think that specific evaluation Leo could probably get started on right away. Now, even with the basic NVM KV evaluation as we did in the hot storage paper, what other detail did we miss there in terms of data?
Can we put on the paper?
Yeah, let's look at the paper. I think we talked about the YCSB performance in terms of throughput.
Latency.
We changed the size of the cache. 256 and 1 gigabyte. We did a timeline plot for read latency and write latency to show how stable it was relative to level DB. So yeah, in that sense, we have a rather interesting evaluation, and we can't use this evaluation in the other paper. So the question is, what do we use? I guess we want to reuse the YCSB workload if possible.
Yeah.
Right, we...
Yeah, I think that reusing YCSB seems reasonable because it's such a standard workload.
Right. The only concern I have there is that we'll show the same data as last time. We have to change something in
but power. What if we actually add power along the secondary Y axis?
Yeah.
So what I was kind of recommending the last time was, what if we do a DRAM trade-off?
Yeah.
Or we compare multi-instance with pools. Basically, you can use YCSB as a test case. You just have to change the experiment that runs the YCSB. You can try to do a DRAM trade-off, you can look at longer level, longer running garbage collection impacts, or you could do multi-instance. You could just simply say, look, the single instance performance was already well described in the hot storage paper, and maybe briefly summarize it here, but not get into it anymore.
Yeah, well, one challenge there is that this is a blind submission.
Ouch.
Yeah, that adds another dimension of complexity to whatever we do.
It's going to be very tricky because everybody, most of the people who actually, if they get the hot storage paper, they exactly know who the authors were for.
I think Roger's point is, even though everybody's going to figure it out, we have a responsibility not to direct them that way.
Not to make it easy for them. Yeah, exactly.
So one thing that we can also do, Raju, is that we're making some claims in the abstract. So we can actually work our evaluation to substantiate those claims. So that might be something interesting that we can do differently compared to hot storage.
Yeah, you're right. And we have to refer to NVM KV, by the way, in the third person, and compare what we do here with that previous paper as well.
Yes.
So that's, yeah, those are some of the challenges, but I think it can be done. I like the idea of doing the memory trade-offs. For instance, in the hot storage paper, we had these 2 points, cache of two specific sizes, 256 megabytes and 1 gigabyte. And all the workloads bunched into one plot. So we could pull it out and do instead a memory sensitivity plot for each of the workloads so that we don't have the exact same plot.
Exactly. Now the reason is that Raju, I'm kind of suggesting that is that the in-memory trend is one of the biggest, you know, kind of technology trends that's there now, and so the role of flash in the in-memory trend or in-memory trade-off is actually a very interesting topic.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And the ability to become efficient in flash directly correlates to the ability to use flash to trade off DRAM.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly are you thinking of? How would be the...
So x-axis would be memory size? Y-axis would stay the same?
Memory size.
Memory size, yeah. Not memory size. The cache size.
Cache size.
Yeah.
So, is it XML 4 and 5 or is it different than what I suggested, Raju? That's like I think it's same as 4 and 5, right?
I'm looking at 4...
In the article evaluation, I have 4 things. One is power, second one is pools, and the next 2 things are collision cache and read cache.
Yeah, I guess it's 4, the read cache. Because that's what we are changing in, if you look at figure 5 of the hot storage paper, we're changing that read cache size.
So instead of having 2 points, you're going to have
an array of points, several points. And we'll still have LevelDB and NVMKV, similar to figure 5 here. But then we'll have a bunch of plots, one for each workload, and the load phase. Right?
Yeah.
So you can start creating that series of plots if there is no other suggestion to improve it. Swami, what do you think?
No, that makes perfect sense, actually. And we want to do the same for collision cache.
If
you can start with read cache,
that might have a bigger impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is that the read cache, the collision cache is in some ways an artifact of the KV design.
Right?
Whereas the read cache is more about the DRAM flash trade-off of cache, you know, in general. So
I see what you're saying, but can't you extend the same thing with collision cache to saying that if you have limited amount of DRAM for collision cache, the same drawback still would exist, right? Because if right now, there seems to be infinite collision cache.
Yes, but I think the point is there is no equivalent level DB exam. Because collision cache is an artifact of the KV design.
Fair enough, that's a good point.
Whereas DRAM flash trade-off is an artifact of KV stored in general.
Yes.
So, for example, you could go so far as to say, what if I had enough DRAM for the entire, workload, working set to fit? Obviously, writes still have to be persisted, but at that point, you pretty much throw as much DRAM as you can at the problem, and you get a certain performance level. Now the question is, how far can you push that down, and what happens to your performance, and where is the knee of the curve in that, right?
Absolutely.
Which is really the key, and that's an argument that can be made for the data cache, not really for the collision cache, because there aren't any experiments you can run with level DB for that one. So ideally what you're looking to get is that you're looking to get a curve with a knee in it for both KV stores, and you want to demonstrate that because the NVM KV is so much more efficient in its use of flash, you know, it reaches its, you know, the knee of the curve later or something, and you can actually get more with less DRAM or have the drop-off be less dramatic as you reduce DRAM because the flash is being better utilized.
Right, and Swami, I think the collision cache experiment is still worth doing it, but I see it more as a sensitivity study to one parameter in the NVM KV design.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. Yeah.
Precisely. It is a very important element of the NVM KV design, but KV design. And in fact, if you can show that, you know, good results can be achieved with minimal size of collision cache, that reinforces that the design is solid.
Is it safe to, this is the question that I want to ask, make sure that I understand what we mean by this, but would it be safe to say that if we had, let's say, a better hashing scheme, we wouldn't need the collision cache?
Sorry, can you repeat that one more time, William?
My understanding of the collision cache is that the main reason why we have it is because, unfortunately, even though we have a good hash function, we still have collisions. In principle, if we didn't have any collisions, we didn't need that.
Yeah.
So is this a consequence? Are we doing this to make up for the bad qualities of the hash function that we have, or is this a consequence of the size of the device? What are the factors that are playing here?
No, that's a good question. I think it's a consequence of sparse address space, basically. The reason the need for collision cache is because the sparse address is limited compared to the physical capacity. So as a result, it's always finite, no matter how much you throw in. That ratio determines how much is the collision probability. And since we can't have an infinite sparse or infinite capacity drive, and basically it's an inverse ratio. The more the physical capacity, the higher the collision rate, and smaller the sparse address, higher the collision rate too. So that's why we actually need this collision cache. It's not because of the hashing function.
I see.
And also the key actually is 128-bit, which we actually try to put it into 38 bits, which actually has a lot of loss and which actually increases the probability. It's not just the hash function, it is how much of data we actually use it to store the key value. Key actually in the sparse address matters too.
Okay. I remember that in the past, usually I was setting the size of the collision cache equal to the size of the RIG cache. But it seems to me that that's an overkill. Perhaps, I think that in the typical scenario, your collision cache should be a lot smaller than the RIG cache.
Yes, because that's a metadata cache.
Yes, so it should be a lot smaller.
Yeah.
When we say a lot smaller, would it be fair to say maybe a tenth of the size, or maybe even less?
Context of the size actually, because there's no value being stored, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about key value pairs. If key is 128 bits.
And also the number of, it should be sized to the predicted number of collisions in the system, not necessarily the amount of data in the system.
Good point.
Right? So you should, in fact, if you take the number of slots and think of it this way, that the hashing system creates a number of virtual slots. Then there's a number of physical slots in the storage device itself. Your likelihood of a collision is the likelihood of the number of physical slots divided by the number of virtual slots, I think.
Physical slots divided by the number of virtual slots. Virtual is bigger, right?
Virtual is bigger than physical.
Correct. And you see, number of collisions, yeah, correct.
Yeah, the number of collisions. So the point is that if you have an expected number of collisions in a full device, then you can size your collision cache to be, like, say, some multiple of that, and that, make sure that you can probabilistically track all the collisions.
That makes sense.
So the sensitivity of the collision cache would be, it seems like the collision cache number should be small. So, I'm thinking, does it make sense for us to do a sensitivity study there, if it's really small anyway?
So, at least I do some of the things. The key thing that for us to do is to show that it is effective and it's helping, right?
Yeah.
At least in terms of, say, we are going to add collision cache to solve some problem, at least we need to say, does it actually solve it, or how much does it actually solve that?
Okay, I see. So, there's one thing which is, with NVM KV, we have these configuration parameters, right? So, for instance, we have a read cache, or we can switch it off if required. We have a collision cache, we can switch it off. We can do combinations. So, one thing I was thinking is, if we want to show these different configurations and run experiments with these different configurations, and compare them in a plot, or do a separate sensitivity study, right? So we could do both. So, go ahead, Swami.
That actually works too. So we do that as long as we show the value that a design decision that you make brings, then it's totally good. You might not need to do a sensitivity study. And even if you do a sensitivity study, it's going to be for condition tests, it's going to be order of megabytes and not order of gigabytes like we do.
Right. Yeah, which is why I was wondering if it's worth doing a sensitivity study for the collision cache, because the numbers are going to be really small. But if we can show that even with a small collision cache, we get significant performance benefit, we can show that by configuring a specific collision cache and with that cache versus, and not with that cache, right? So two different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually like that one. As long as we show that value, then don't need to do such analysis. That actually is the point.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so Leo, I guess if we have not confused you by now, let's see what are you planning to do?
Hey guys, I need to step out. I have to go upstairs and talk to someone for a moment.
No
you
problem.
Can continue. Okay,
great. Yes.
So my plan is to do the workloads with different sets of caches, a free cache, not collision cache, and maybe perhaps do the same thing with two settings of the collision cache, no collision cache whatsoever, and some fixed size of collision cache, just to have to see the impact of the...
At different values of the read cache, or...?
Yeah, different values of the read cache.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll be changing the read cache. I have two set points for the collision cache.
Okay.
Zero and a fixed value.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds very good. And then you'll have level DB also as for each of those points, right?
Yes, of course.
This is going to take time, I'm assuming.
Yes.
How long will it take?
I don't remember the times that it took before, but...
But can we use... I guess one question is, can we use this weekend? Or is it easy to get it going?
I'll plan to use part of the weekend to start doing this, yeah.
Okay. Well, because we have 2 days, and if it's just a matter of using, running those experiments over a long period of time, we should try and use the weekend time.
Well, nobody is using the machine, yeah, using it exclusively, so...
I know, but I'm saying that we have 48 hours, which we either use or we don't use. So the question is, how long do these experiments take? Are we losing a lot if we don't use these 48 hours?
Or you're suggesting using this time to run the long one that to fill up the device?
Oh, no. No, I didn't... well, actually, that's a possibility. But I wasn't thinking of that.
It actually takes a long time from what Leo used to do earlier.
Yeah.
Especially with TSB. So running it earlier might actually help.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I was wondering. So, for instance, if you're going to do all these different read cache sizes and for all these different personalities, the time can add up.
It will, yes, definitely.
So, that's why I'm saying, if you can use these, use the weekend, then that would be good. Because that's going to be we know for sure we're going to use that data.
Sure, okay.
Now, the other part of it, which is the I see this set of results as two sets of results, right? One is empty device and the other is full device. What you're talking about is the full device variant, which I probably won't go there until I do all the empty device variants first. Because the full device variants, like, shortest job first, right?
Exactly, that was what I was thinking too.
Yeah, so I wouldn't go to the full device variants until we, do all the empty device variants.
Okay.
It's just, I don't know, I think Swami agrees, but what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Let's do that. I also think it's not just because it's a shortest job first.
Okay.
I also think it's a more relevant experimental point to have than...
Full device? Well, people might argue that, right? People might say that when you have a KV store in production, you're not going to have an empty device.
especially Margo.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that I would rather have one set of experiments which are complete rather than a set of experiments that potentially are more relevant but incomplete.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that argument. I'll use it to answer your question.
I don't know if that qualifies as a response.
The completeness is important.
Okay, yeah, I agree. Completeness, which is why I'm saying that, well, someone made me the presenter. Okay, of that other meeting, it's fine. So Swami, I guess, do you agree with
the... Thanks for using WebEx. Visit our website at www.webex.com.
Oh my God, what did I do there? I didn't mean to do that. Oh my God.
Should we start the recording? Or pass it at least?
Yeah.